everybody. So my name is Bianca Schroeder. I'm currently doing a postdoc with Garth Gibson, and that's what the work I'm going to talk about is part of the work that I've been doing as part of my postdoc. So the motivation behind this work is very simple. System reliability is important, and one of the reasons is that failures are simply very expensive. If you look at the total cost of ownership of modern IT systems, not storage systems in particular, but IT systems in general, many estimate that up to 50% of the total cost of ownership are actually spent on avoiding failures and recovering from failures. If you look at storage systems in particular, numbers that have been cited are a storage failure that leads to data unavailability can cost you millions per hour. A storage failure that leads to data loss can cost you millions for every 100 megabytes that you lose. So clearly, storage reliability is important, and we want to design storage systems to be reliable. Now, what makes it challenging to design reliable storage systems? We think that one of the big challenges is that we do not have a good understanding currently of what failures even look like. What are their basic characteristics? And if you look at some of the comments that other researchers have also made in the past, as a result of not having a very good understanding of what failures really look like empirically, a lot of the current research is just based on anecdotes or simplistic assumptions. Now, why is that? There's just no data publicly available on failures in real large-scale systems. So the work that I'm presenting here today is actually part of a broader research agenda that we have started working on. And as part of this research agenda, one of our main goals is to create a public failure data repository, a repository that's publicly available to any researchers that contains failure data from a large variety of different large-scale real systems, where researchers can go download data that they can then use to drive their experiments, their simulations, or their analysis. Then we hope that by analyzing this data, we'll get a better understanding what failures look like, and we can create more realistic models to go beyond the simplistic assumptions that we're currently using. Finally, in the long run, we really hope that having failure data publicly available will help us to exploit the data to improve system design, to build more reliable systems by knowing what failures look like and what to design for. So let me say a few words about the failure data repository that we're currently working on. So at this point, oops, that's an animation that's not working quite properly. At this point, we have data from 6 sites covering more than 30 systems. The data comes from high-performance computing sites as well as internet services sites. The high-performance computing sites in particular Los Alamos National Labs and the Pittsburgh Supercomputing Center. The other data contributors would like to remain anonymous. So in this data that we have collected so far, we have 2 types of data. The first type of data covers cluster node outages, so node outages in large-scale clusters. The second type of data covers storage failures. In particular, this data contains hardware replacement logs, basically. And that's what I'm going to talk about in this talk. One note here, we're of course happy at any time to add more data to this collection. That's one of our main goals. So if you have any data that you can think you could contribute, come talk to us. We'd be very happy to have more data. So talking about storage failure data that we have, first of all, what is the data that we actually have? So this table gives a brief overview over the different data sets that we have. This is a big table, and the important thing to take away really is, so first of all, we have 7 data sets coming from 5 different organizations. Oops. Some animations are not working here. So basically the important thing to notice is that these organizations are 2 types, high-performance computing sites as well as internet services, so there's some variety in the type of sites. There's also some variety in the types of drives that are covered. So we have SCSI drives, we have SATA drives, and we have fiber channel drives. Also, if you look at the count and duration of this data, the data covers more than 100,000 drives, and most of the data sets span on the order of years. So this is a pretty nice collection of data. If you look at what was available before publicly, that's pretty much nothing. So what makes data collection so difficult. Before I go into the results of analyzing this data, what I would like to say is, so first of all, it's difficult to get data. The reason is simply that data is very sensitive. Failure data is very sensitive. There are also problems because of different definitions used by different people. So if you look at different data sets, they have different formats, they use different fields. When it comes to storage data in particular, there's this question of failure versus replacement. So all the data we have are replacement logs. That means we use in some way the customer's definition of a failure, which is the customer decides a drive is faulty and replaces it. This might not always agree with the vendor's definition of failure. Vendors claim that a lot of the drives that are returned to them by customers, they cannot find any trouble with it, actually. Then even after you get the data, you get the your definitions clear, it's not like you run MATLAB and you have a nice paper. There really goes a lot of work into cleaning the data and making any sense of it. So, for example, one nice result that we had from our initial analysis of the data is failures happen at 11:43 a.m. So what happened there was that some system administrator who was responsible for creating those log entries was a little bit behind with his work, and to catch up, he just cut and pasted the 11:43 from one entry. So you have to, basically you need good connections to the site that you got the data from. You have to go back very frequently to talk to them, what does this data mean, and you will find faulty data that you have to discard, or for this case, we were actually able to find a second log that independently recorded the same information, so we could get the same data from another source. So looking at the actual data, and what did we find? So I begin by looking at the general properties, and then I talk a little bit about statistical modeling of the data. So what's the most general basic property of failure data? It's probably how often do failures happen. So we first looked at, for the different types of cluster systems that this data comes from, how frequent are disk failures really compared to the failures of other components. If you look at the replaced components, all types of hardware components, what fraction was hard drives compared to other hardware components? And this table gives you the answer to make it easier to read. Basically, for all three systems where we had information on all hardware replacements, not only storage-related replacements, hard drives were always in the top three, making up between 20 and 50% of all replacements. Now, you could say maybe in some of the systems there were just many more hard drives than other components, like many more hard drives than, for example, CPUs. But it turns out, even if you normalize by the population size of the different hardware components, you still have the same ranking. So hardware replacements and storage disk replacements are a major headache in running large-scale systems. So far we just talked about the absolute frequency, the relative frequency of how many drives are replaced for every CPU that's being replaced. Another question is, if you have a large population of hard drives, what's the percentage of drives you expect to replace in every given year, for example? So what's the annual replacement rate in the field? So how would you determine this? One way is to go to the data sheet of the drive, which specifies the mean time to failure, which for the drives in our data set is between 1 million and 1.5 million hours. And from there you can compute that the annual replacement rate should be between 0.58 and 0.88%. This is the solid and the dashed lines in this graph. So how does this compare to what we found in our data? So what do our customers report with their annual replacement rates? That's what this graph shows. So what you can see is that, first of all, for all the data sets we have, the empirical annual replacement rate is much higher than what the data sheet might suggest. So the average is around 3%, and 3% is actually also the most common value. So most of the replacement rates for most of the data sets are actually around 3%. So this suggests that field replacements are maybe a very different process from what the data sheet might suggest. There's another very interesting observation in this graph. So I said initially that this data covers SCSI drives, fiber channel drives, and SATA drives. And SATA drives are probably most commonly assumed to be the least reliable of those types of drives. In our graph, these are the SATA drives. So we really do not have any evidence based on this data that SATA drives are less reliable. What we do maybe have evidence for is that operating and environmental conditions have a big effect. If you look at the HPC3 data, that's the light blue bars, the three light blue bars, the two leftmost bars are actually scarcity drives, and the rightmost one are SATA drives, and they behave very similarly in their replacement patterns. So maybe it's operating conditions that have a bigger effect than the actual type of drive. So one complaint that people have always had with the datasheet MPTF is that it's one number. It's just one number, and it does not characterize effects like aging, for example. Typically, people assume that the failure rates over the lifetime of a hardware component has some sort of a bathtub shape with high infant mortality, then some stable life for a while, and wear out in the end. In particular, the numbers that have been quoted for disk drives is for the first year, you have some instability due to infant mortality, then you have 4 years of stable life before you before the nominal lifetime of the drive ends and you replace the drive. So how realistic is this model? So the three graphs you see in the bottom do actually show the average replacement rates per year for three data sets where we had age information. So what you see pretty obviously is that this stable bottom of the bathtub behavior that the model suggests is not really what we see in the data. Instead, what we see in the data is early on, even after the first year, steadily increasing replacement rates. So it seems that wear out does set in much earlier than often assumed. Another thing we notice is that there's much less infant mortality than often assumed. So in fact, one proposal that has been made is to replace the one MTTF number by a model that gives you four different numbers for the first year of a drive lifetime to model infant mortality, and then one number for the remaining 4 years for the steady state. So what our work suggests instead is when modeling this, you should focus maybe more on the early wear-out effects and not on the infant mortality effect so much. So a few words about statistical modeling. So as I said in the beginning, people often make very simplistic assumptions when they set up their statistical model for evaluation, analytical evaluation, experimental evaluation. And typically the assumption there is that the time between any two failures, any two drive failures, is exponentially distributed, and that failures are independent. So starting with the first assumption, based on the data we have, how realistic is this assumption really? What we find is not realistic. We can actually, with high statistical confidence, say the data we see does not see exponentially distributed times between failures. Now, how is the data different from an exponential distribution? First of all, it has much higher variability. And second, it has decreasing hazard rates. And I'll explain you in a second what that means. So basically, hazard rates tell you how likely a failure is at any given time, as a function of the time it has been since the most recent failure. So if on the x-axis is the time since the last replacement, the last drive replacement, on the y-axis it's the remaining time until the next replacement, for an exponential distribution this would be a flat line. So for an exponential distribution, the expected time until the next failure does not depend on the fact whether the recent failure was an hour ago or 2 weeks ago. It's always a steady expectation. Okay, so how does the data look like? For the data, actually, the longer you have been going without any failures, the longer an expectation you will last before you see the next replacement. So initially, suppose you've just had a replacement in your cluster. In expectation, you will go another 4 days without a replacement, the same as in the exponential. Now, suppose you have been lasting for 20 days without any replacements. Now, we're at the far right end of the x-axis. Now, in expectation, you will live another 14 days without any failures. That's what I mean by decreasing hazard rates. The longer it has been since the most recent failure, the longer you will live. So one note here, do not confuse this with a bathtub behavior. If you look at the distribution of disk lifetimes, so how long does an individual disk live before it dies, this distribution has increasing hazard rates. There's wear out. This distribution really shows you for any two drives in a cluster, what's the average time, what is the distribution of the time between failures? What's the distribution of the time between two drives, any two drives in a cluster failing? And that's why the results come out different. So this is the first published data that actually allows the rejection of the exponential assumption with statistical confidence. A lot of people have maybe speculated it's not quite realistic, but so far there was nothing that told us what the real world looks like and that told us the current assumption is not realistic statistically. The second assumption is failures are independent. And we do actually find all kinds of correlations in the data, which means failures are clearly not independent. So to show you one example, this is the autocorrelation graph, which basically shows how the failure process correlated with itself at different lags. The lags are weeks on the x-axis, and if the data was independent, the correlation would always be zero. If you look on the other hand at the data, the disk replacement data, there's strong autocorrelation. There's really strong autocorrelation. Short lags, like 0.7 is something that statisticians would say is a strong autocorrelation. And even at long lags, like up to 100 weeks, there's still significant correlation. So clearly there's much more complex correlation patterns going on, and the independence assumption is not realistic. Now the question is, I've shown you all kinds of statistics. I've shown you that maybe many of the assumptions we make are not really very realistic. How does this affect us? So first of all, can we make use of this in any way? And does it really make a big difference whether we use simplistic assumptions versus the real data? So I would like to show you one example where we look at the impact of using the real data versus simplistic assumptions. And this is a very standard example. We're trying to estimate the probability that a RAID fails, which is the probability that you lose data in a RAID. And basically this probability depends on the probability of having a second drive failure during reconstruction. So there's a standard way to estimate this. You assume the exponential distribution. You get the average for this distribution from the drive data sheet. And you get a number, which is tiny. It's a tiny little pink bar, which is the probability that during the first hour of reconstruction, the second drive will fail. And now we went and estimated the exact same probability based on the real data. And it's a huge green bar. So you're way off. The question is why? You could argue that, okay, I used the data sheet MTTF, and I showed you already that replacement rates tend to be much higher than the data sheet MTTF. So what if we use the empirically measured mean time to failure from this data, but we still use the exponential assumption? You get the blue bar, which does get you closer to the green bar, but it's still off by more than a factor of 5. So it turns out you really need to use a different type of distribution. In this case, we found that the Weibull distribution is a very good fit to the data. You have to use something like the Weibull distribution, which gives you a better fit. And the same results also hold for longer reconstruction times. So far, I've shown you only 1 hour reconstruction time. You can look at 3 hours, 6 hours, you see the same trend. So what this shows us basically is it really does make a big difference whether you assume failures are exponentially independent or you use real data. So in conclusion, what this tells us, many of the common assumptions we make about failures are not very realistic, and it can have a big impact on your results whether you make simplistic assumptions or you work with real data. What this means is lots of motivation for future work. As I said, we're currently working on creating a public failure data repository. We won't have much more data than we have currently. If you can contribute, we would be very happy. There's also strong motivation to build more realistic models. So I've shown you that many of the models we're using are not very realistic. For example, time between failures not exponential, failures are not independent. But what are the more realistic models that we should use instead? And finally, in the long run, how can we use the statistical properties that we found to build more realistic systems? Can we, for example, automate or get proactive by exploiting patterns and maybe predicting something about the future? So this concludes my talk. Thanks for your attention. Also, thanks to all the organizations who have contributed data. So this is namely Los Alamos National Labs and the Pittsburgh Supercomputing Center, but also a number of organizations and individuals that have contributed data and that would like to remain anonymous. Thanks a lot.
So we'd like to ask people questions.
How So I wonder whether you looked at it. I'm assuming that failures at company one and company two aren't correlated.
Right.
But did you look at it in a node or the same machine room or the same rack?
Yes, it's a good question. So I always looked at the failures within one given cluster. So I looked at the time between any two drives failing the same cluster system. Ideally, for example, for the last example that I showed for the RAID failure estimation, you would like to use drives within the same RAID, even instead of just two drives in the same storage room. Unfortunately, for all the data that we have, we never had a single incidence of two drives failing in the same RAID. So we used the probability distribution that we got from the entire cluster. I think this is a conservative estimate, and the reason is that the correlation between two drives failing in the same RAID is probably higher than the correlation between any two drives in the cluster system, because they are in the same casing, they share software and controller and so on. So I think that if you used really drive failures, time to drive failures within the RAID, the results would likely be more stronger even. We did look at the same rack, and for one of the data sets where we had this information available, and there we did not seem to find a significantly stronger correlation than if you just take any two drives in the whole machine room. But that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. So Jeff Kenning, Harvey Mudd College, sort of extending that previous question, do you have any hypotheses for these phenomena? I mean, these are very strange that two drives in the same room seem to remember whether you replaced a drive recently and decide to fail if you did.
I don't know whether this is really so strange. I mean, so there are different factors that affect drive reliability, and we don't know for sure because we don't have data on them which ones matter most. Like, people have cited temperature, vibration, workload. And if you have two drives in the same machine room, definitely their environmental conditions are the same, like temperature, for example. It's likely if temperature goes up, it will go up for a couple of drives in the same machine room. Usage patterns might be the same, like during the day, there's more usage than in the night, possibly. But we cannot really pinpoint which one of these factors it is, because we don't have the data to say so.
Chris Lum, Data Domain. So one of the things that you obviously have from looking at replacement rates is you don't really have any NTF numbers. Correct from this number?
Yes.
Do you think, one of the things that seems really interesting to me is I believe the models may actually be accurate for real failures. However, a lot of them are software-related, environmental. Do you think you could actually use this to try to predict when a drive really is bad and prevent the failure in the first place?
So that's a good question, and I actually meant to mention this in the talk, but I didn't. So vendors claim, and I've seen different numbers, so we talked to some Seagate folks who say that about 50% of the drives that get returned to them by their customers, 50% have no trouble found. There are different numbers, like I saw some citation in the paper that will be presented next, that are a little bit more conservative, 20 to 50% no trouble found. So interestingly, if you take the graph that I showed about the annual replacement rate that we see compared to what you expect from the data sheet, if you would take our numbers and you scale them down by a factor of two, you're still more than a factor of two higher than what the data sheet would suggest.
Okay, I'm Ralph from IBM Almaden and Seval Systems. When you did the statistical analysis, the null hypothesis you always use is that the drives are samples taken from a single parent universe of distributions. But that's clearly not true. I mean, first you have SCSI and SATA, but then within there you also have different populations. Have you tried to separate your drives not just by model and lot and manufacturer, but by lot number? We all know that there are good drive batches, and sometimes you get just a whole pallet load of, excuse me, junk. Do you have any handle on getting on manufacturers' lot numbers? Because I have the hunch that if you did that, mm-hmm. your correlations would drop to the null hypothesis.
So that's a very valid question. And ideally, we would have liked to break everything down by batches, by vintage, and so on. All our data comes from customers, and customers usually do not have this information. We have a relatively clean data set, though, with the Pittsburgh supercomputing data, because this is a large population of drives, more than 3,000 drives, that were all purchased at exactly the same time and put into use at exactly the same time. And they are the same drives in terms of model and so on, but they're likely to come from similar batches as well. I guess one question you might ask is, everybody knows that bad batches can look very different from regular batches. So is there a possibility that our data is skewed by like one bad batch? And it seems like given the amount of data we have, it's unlikely that all the data is affected by a bad batch.
But maybe like 12 bad batches mixed in randomly?
It doesn't seem very likely to have independently for 7 data sets, all of them being affected by bad batches. We did see in one of the data sets one example for a bad batch where one of the customers did decide to replace the whole drive population of this particular batch because they figured it was a bad batch. And they talked to the vendor, and the vendor and the customer actually agreed this was a bad batch. And this actually happened to be SATA drives. So the example we have for bad batch is that example.
John from Argonne. Did you have data from your suppliers as to how many drives went through a burn-in period from their vendor versus how many were bought off the shelf?
We don't have information on that, but it seems that whatever people do during the burn-in period, no matter whether it's the vendor or the customer who also usually does some testing on site, it does seem to work well in masking infant mortality, because in the field, once the system is up and running after the test phase, you don't seem to see much infant mortality. So whatever the testing is on the vendor side or the customer side, it seems to work.
Yeah, I just want to discourage people from eliminating bad batches from the data, because if you're designing a system using this, you can't assume that you won't get a bad batch.
That is true. And out of the, I guess, 7 data sets that we've seen, it included one bad batch. So I don't know. I don't think it's statistically significant to say this is the probability of bad batches, but they do happen, and that's, we've seen it in the data. Okay, thank you very much.